The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WNHU, its staff, or its management, or that of the University of New Haven.
Hit it!
Women's lives are valued only when we're commodities on the sex market.
Rock. Rock.
Your revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not happen between these thighs. Will not happen between these thighs. Will not happen between these thighs. The real revolution ain't about booty size, the Versace's you buys, or the Lexus you drives. And though we've lost Biggie Smalls, baby, your notorious revolution will never allow you to lace no lyrical douche in my p-. Your revolution will not be you killing me softly with Fugees. Your revolution ain't gonna knock me up without no ring and produce little future MCs. Because that revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not find me in the backseat of a Jeep with LL hard as hell. You know, doing it and doing it and doing it well. You know, doing it and doing it and doing it well. Your revolution will not be you smacking it up, flipping it, or rubbing it down.
I don't know why we can't turn around that around. I mean, why are men the standard? And, you know, anything
exactly.
Men can do, women can do.
Yeah.
How about why can't men be as less violent as
yes,
women are?
I know.
How come men can't use prostitutes as few as women use prostitutes?
Yeah, definitely.
Why can't we make women this great standard? Because, you know, we're doing a whole lot less raping and prostituting
mm-hmm.
and screwing our own kids, us women.
Yeah.
So we should be the model for this, right?
Exactly.
Okay, good morning. You're listening to the F-Files on 88.7 FM, WNHU West Haven. Today I'm here with Sam Berg, who is a radical feminist activist, writer, born and raised in New York, and now living in Portland, Oregon. A longtime activist with experience managing media for political campaigns and lobbying to alleviate the worst aspects of poverty, in 2002 she co-founded and eventually directed a sexual health activist group organizing reproductive rights actions with young women in Portland. The past few years, Sam has focused her writings and energies towards education about the harms of legalized prostitution and the rise in sex trafficking and other forms of sexual capitalism through the 90s. She is also founder of genderberg.com. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you.
Why don't you first tell me about your website, Genderberg?
Sure. Well, I've been, as many people, poking around the internet
mm-hmm.
since about the late 90s. And I've been engaging in feminist activism since about the same time. And a lot of it focused mostly at that time on reproductive rights, mm-hmm. choice activism, because there's so much work to do on that front.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a couple of years. But I started to notice as I went, you know, deeper into looking at the social problems that women face. Like, it's not just enough to ask, why don't we have abortion? You need to really figure, like, really, why
mm-hmm.
are these rights so lacking? And the more I went into that, the more it really brought me back to the way that women are seen as being owned by men
mm-hmm.
in every way, whether that's abortion or rape or their labor, their childbearing, all of it
mm-hmm.
is owned by men.
Yeah.
And to me, I kept digging deeper,
mm-hmm.
and I saw prostitution pretty much being the paradigm that so many women have to live under, and really all women are kind of forced into this sexual commodity role.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing this activism, a little bit of writing here, a little bit of work there, and other women on the internet found me,
mm-hmm.
and we got together, and we decided we were going to start an activism blog. And then the APAN network was born. APAN is the Anti-Porn Activist Network,
mm-hmm.
and it was just a handful of us, maybe five or six of us, writing letters to get offensive T-shirts pulled, writing letters to our local media that was holding a pro-prostitution, pro-pornography articles,
mm-hmm.
and then it just kept growing, and we found the blog format limiting, so I created a forum board on my website that was originally posting my articles, and then we just created a subsection to be the community where we would work together on anti-porn actions,
mm-hmm.
and thus Genderberg proper was born.
Now, you have a whole section on prostitution on genderberg.com. And you have a bunch of questions. They're sort of, you know, most frequently asked questions about prostitution. I thought we should go through some of those.
Sure.
Now, the first question is, isn't prostitution mostly a choice? And we hear this, too. This is a great argument, too, that we hear for pornography and every other thing that women do. So isn't prostitution mostly a choice?
Well, it's a choice of some people. It's just not the choice of the prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the choice of the men who choose to use them.
Mm-hmm.
They make the choice 100% of the time. But the women, actually, it's really not been found in any study, any research, any anecdotal, mm-hmm. even collected research, that this is the case, that women choose it. Prostitution is a lack of choices. Mm-hmm. It's what women turn to when they don't have other choices. If it were any other way, you wouldn't see the people with the least choices most choosing it.
Mm-hmm.
Poor women, minority women, women from impoverished nations, places where war has torn up the whole social structure.
Mm-hmm.
These are people with the least choices of all choices, and they are most represented in prostitution. So something's funky about there, mm-hmm. if we're going to call that a choice.
Yeah, and I find this argument definitely focuses on women without looking at the demand. And, you know, it completely decontextualizes commercial sex from the cultural constraints that burden women's choices, like you said. And some of these burdens are job discrimination, gender inequality in courts and the law, sexual abuse as you know, as young children, and even as adults, lack of reproductive rights. You know, so all of these things affect women's choice. You know, a lot of times people don't take this into consideration, but the question we should be asking is not why do women choose to do it, but why do men choose to rent women out at such high rates?
And right? That's where the rhetoric of choice mm-hmm. becomes really problematic, because choice is a capitalist word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you go to the store and you choose among 10 brands of deodorant.
Right.
You know, that's your freedom to choose
yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
You know, what roll-on, spray,
yeah.
solid, clear, that's your choice. That's
yeah.
consumerism.
Right.
And when we talk about prostitution, in the same words that we're talking about capitalism of products,
mm-hmm.
selling of things, that's problematic because we're talking about people.
Right.
And we should be framing it in terms of human rights, not mm-hmm. in terms of product distribution,
mm-hmm.
commodities, consumer choice.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, women are sold as commodities, so we're placed into the same category as all the other ones. In this book by Sheila Jeffries that I'm going to use throughout this program, she has a book out called The Idea of Prostitution. And in it, she cites Maggie O'Neill, who works with prostituted women in Birmingham. And she uses the term decision to choice, as decision, the word decision has the advantage of being able to convey the hard task women have when in a situation of very few alternatives.
Right.
You know, so where perhaps all of them are undesirable to a greater or lesser extent. The word simply choice implies that there are viable alternatives to select from, and that's not the case.
Right. And just because something mm-hmm. is a choice doesn't mean it's acceptable. I mean, people
right.
choose things that aren't acceptable all the time because
right.
they don't really have options.
Right. Or they choose it for other reasons. I mean, a lot of women have been sexually abused as children and just choose to continue the victimization of themselves, you know.
It's so problematic how much child rape is a predicator of adult prostitution, and how many women are taught this from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you're good for.
Right.
This is what you are valued, and
mm-hmm.
this is what you can do.
Exactly.
And when you've got nothing else, no two pennies to rub together, this is what you have that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a message that's instilled in girls very young.
Oh, yeah. And there's that great report that we actually got at the Pornography and Pop Culture Conference on from the APA, the sexualization
yeah.
of young girls. And that they have thongs now for, what, 7 and 8 year olds? I mean, that's that's absolutely ridiculous that we're marketing clothing that strippers wear to 7 and 8 years.
It's hard for even you and I
mm-hmm.
to even imagine what it's like for children growing up now. Because
yeah.
when I was a child, there was no internet.
Right.
Internet didn't come until I started in college.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that of what kids are accessing now, I mean, I've seen what's online, pornography, prostitution-wise. It's rampant, and it's really violating of human rights in major ways that
mm-hmm.
I could go on to for several hours.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's so accessible at such a young age, when kids don't have honest sexual education
yeah.
in any form, much
exactly.
less eight, not 18,
mm-hmm.
we don't even get it.
Yeah. I actually wrote down a piece from Emma Goldman's Traffic in Women, which she wrote in 1911, and it still stands true today. She says, it is a conceded fact that women are being reared as sex commodities, and yet she is kept in absolute ignorance of the meaning and importance of sex. Everything dealing with that subject is suppressed, and persons who attempt to bring light into this terrible darkness are persecuted and thrown into prison. Yet it is nevertheless true that so long as a girl is not to know how to take care of herself, not to know the function of the most important part of her life, we need not be surprised if she becomes an easy prey to prostitution or to any other form of a relationship which degrades her to the position of an object for mere sex gratification. And this is 1911. So, I mean, things are 10 times worse now, if not 100 times worse for young girls growing up in this culture.
Yeah, and at the same time, like, as you said, the title of that Sheila Jeffries book, The Idea of Prostitution, at the same time, girls are learning that this is what they're worth. Uh-huh. Boys are learning that this is what girls are worth.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, at the flip side, there's still that demand aspect of where do boys get this idea that it's even acceptable or okay or pleasurable to pay for sex from a woman who would not agree to have sex with you without money.
Right.
That to me is kind of, I don't know, repulsive.
Mm-hmm. And it's just,
I wouldn't pay somebody to have a fake conversation with me and call them my friend.
Yeah.
What would be the point?
Right. And that's how men learn their sexuality too. And, you know, it's common now to go to bars and there'd be signs that say, you know, we'll pay you or free drinks for women who lift their shirts. I mean, how is this much different, you know, than prostitution? And then she also quotes Janice Raymond in this book, and she points out that Marx is respected for his insight into the fact that people do not make choices under conditions they have created in the context of workers. But feminists who apply a similar understanding to the condition of women are criticized for turning women into victims. And this is something new as well, as radical feminists get accused of victimizing women. You know, and Jeffries definitely tackles that as well in her book. She tackles everything in this book.
Well, victim is something that somebody does to someone. Mm-hmm. It's not an ideology you adopt.
Right.
You know, it's something, you become a victim when somebody victimizes you.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that women are doing all this horribleness to ourselves, that it's kind of all in our heads, is really invisibilizing men's responsibility for having more money than us, more power than us socially, more academic training than us. I mean, they have these resources. And, you know, and Spider-Man says, you know, with great responsibility, you know, comes great power and all that good stuff. I mean, we understand that people who have more owe more as a concept.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to translate when it comes to prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, when it's prostitution, all those rules are off. Everybody's equal.
Mm-hmm.
The woman has a thing that the man wants and the man pays for it, and it's an equal exchange.
Right.
Well, if it were an equal exchange, this wouldn't be the huge problem that it is.
Right.
There wouldn't be slavery to meet this need like there is.
Yeah. And it's naturalized, too. It's seen as something that men just do. Men have this higher sex drive than women, and they need sex, you know. And that's just not the case as well. It's completely essentialist to say that. But people really do believe that. They really
that's
do.
That's troubling. I don't know if it's something that's been around forever. I suppose it sort of has, but it takes on different manifestations.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that sex is a need, like food, like water.
Right.
To me, that's just rape culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just says that how can you deny a man who has to stick it somewhere?
Right.
And of course, no man has to stick it anywhere.
Right. And then there's this idea, too, that if there wasn't pornography and prostitution, so many more women would be raped. But they are being raped within those industries. you know what I mean?
So what happens when you look around and there's porn everywhere and on TV and all your magazine stands, and women are still getting raped in unbelievably large numbers.
If not higher numbers. So, yeah, the other common question you have on your website, too, is prostitution is the world's oldest profession and will always exist.
Well, that's a nice justifier. I think it's a way to put it on women.
Mm-hmm.
As if, well, women have always been these seductive witches.
Yeah.
Who've always been tempting men with their goodies.
Yeah.
You know, really puts the emphasis on women.
Right. And who made their bodies into goodies to begin with? You know what I mean? Like, we were born these inherent temptresses. And Jeffries tackles this too in her book. She says that such an approach naturalizes male sexuality and sees the present masculine practice of objectification as essential for all human beings instead of historically contingent. And Pat Califia, she quotes her often, and Pat Califia says women would use prostitutes too if women had the same buying power that men do.
And yet we do. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't cost a lot to buy a prostitute.
Right.
What, $50 a meal, a warm place to spend the night?
Right.
It doesn't cost very much at all.
Right.
So women really could. And what you find is when you look at women as consumers, which are so, so few of them, really, it's ridiculous how few it is. They tend to be sex tourists in other countries where one, the men are black.
Yeah.
And two, generally, they're very poor.
Yeah, I noticed that. Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of really showing the truth of the paradigm. It's not that women are preying on the people around them, the men around them. They're going to a place where their racial superiority, where their monetary superiority, where everything is favoring them,
mm-hmm.
and they're preying on those men there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a situation that men don't even have to go anywhere for. It's in their neighborhoods. It's in the red light district that every sizable city has.
Yeah, it's on the computer.
Women
it's
have
everywhere.
To travel far mm-hmm. to get to that mm-hmm. difference of power. Men just got to go outside their house.
Right, but women participating in these institutions that men created really isn't empowering either. I mean, this is like this liberal feminist idea that anything men can do, women can do too. And if women can do it, they've gained equality. You know, that's not what we're looking for here.
I don't know why we can't turn around that around. I mean, why are men the standard? And you know, anything
exactly.
men can do, women can do.
Yeah.
How about why can't men be as less violent as
yes,
women are?
I know.
How come men can't use prostitutes as few as women use prostitutes?
Yeah, definitely.
Why can't we make women this great standard? Because, you know, we're doing a whole lot less raping and prostituting
mm-hmm.
and screwing our own kids, us women.
Yeah.
So we should be the model for this, right?
Exactly. I agree. But don't a lot of women enjoy prostitution?
Well, it's said that, and it's mostly said that by, guess who, men.
Mm.
But even women who are in the sex worker rights movement know that that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carol Lee, who is very famous, has books, tours internationally promoting prostitution as work, has said that 95% of her friends want to leave prostitution. And that's about right, as global studies have shown.
Mm-hmm.
It's never fewer than 9 out of 10 prostitutes want out of prostitution immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a study that shows a majority of people in prostitution, men, women, or transgendered, wanted to stay there, wanted help being better prostitutes, you know, wanted things just tinkered a little bit, but are generally okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've offered money. You know, I'll pay for a study that shows this.
Yeah.
And I've never seen one.
Yeah.
And I imagine at this point, I've been such a burr in the side of these sex worker rights activists.
Yeah.
That if they had any of this factoid information, they would have really shoved it in my face by now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking I would have seen it at this point.
Yeah.
And I've looked. I've really looked through all the research, all the studies, all the books, and what I see is anecdotal information where one person's personal story is translated into an estimated 40 million prostitutes around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of prostitutes.
Yeah.
And to think that, you know, a white middle-class woman who was a call girl in Washington, D.C., working as an aide, is going to give you the face of modern sex work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the face of modern sex work is a not-white teenage girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
She's not a white aide mm-hmm. making good money in Washington, D.C. wearing designer clothes.
Right.
But yeah. I'd really much, I mean, the interesting part about it to me is the men are the same. The same men who would use that woman in D.C., the aide,
mm-hmm.
are the same men who will fly to Thailand
mm-hmm.
and use those women there.
Right.
So while, you know, we can always talk about how much of a choice is it for women, how much of them want to do it, how much of them like doing it, or we can look at this complete 100% population of men, there's a lot more Johns than mm-hmm. prostitutes. Way more. And you
yeah.
never hear from them.
No.
There's no John's Rights Association I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Men don't want to admit to this. They seem to support prostitution as a theoretical right of women. You know, mm-hmm. like a woman's right to be
yeah.
a hoe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As if we haven't always had that.
But don't
You've
you know...
You've always got the right to be a hoe.
You know it's hard out there for a pimp.
It's terrible, I tell you.
You know
it's
it.
Terrible. We need more movies about that.
Yeah, they have a rough life.
You know, I'd really much rather focus on these men because there's at least 10 to 20 Johns
mm-hmm.
per prostitute in the average American city,
mm-hmm.
and they are invisible. And they're our fathers and our brothers. 60%
yeah.
of American men that go to prostitutes are married. So this idea of, like, the lonely guy who's not getting any, it's actually men who are getting a lot.
Yeah.
Who just keep deciding that they want more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't care who they put at risk, themselves. Because sex is never risk-free.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not that good as humans yet in making it risk-free. We're getting
right.
better. But men still refuse to wear condoms a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
They insist on it. And there's nothing a woman can do to make him if he refuses. She can lose a few teeth if she insists on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens. They find studies in Africa show that when women insist, when prostitutes insist that the men use a condom, the men get violent.
Mm-hmm.
And they punch and they get upset,
mm-hmm.
and then the woman usually relents. Or they just offer to pay more. which is its own kind of economic coercion.
Right.
So physically or economically, men coerce the sex they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think we need to look at. I've read a lot about AIDS, and a lot of international dignitaries on this seem to be aware that the main problem of AIDS is not a problem of prostitution, because prostitutes don't spread AIDS. It's men who use prostitutes who
mm-hmm.
spread AIDS.
Right.
And we focus on the women so much and health checks for them and all these mm-hmm. things for them, and we're really not looking at the men and the risk that they are taking with their own lives, these prostituted women's lives, and their families' lives.
Mm-hmm. For those that are just tuning in, you're listening to The F-Files, and I'm here with Sam Berg, who is a radical feminist activist and writer. She also is founder of genderberg.com, and we're here today talking about the facts on prostitution. You can catch this on the web at ffiles.net if you'd like to listen to it again. And you were just talking about the facts about Johns and tricks, and this is one of your questions on your website. Why can't you see Johns tricks who pay for prostitutes as just customers of sexual services?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this book, The Idea of Prostitution, Jeffries cites Kate Millett in saying that it's not sex the prostitute is really made to sell. It is degradation. And the buyer, the John, is not buying sexuality, but power. Power over another human being, the dizzy ambition of being lord of another's will for a stated period of time. You know, so it's not really just about sex. It's about this control over women and this power that men are socialized to want to get.
I think feminists have done a good job generally getting it understood that rape is not about pent-up sexual frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this healthy, normal thing that is the sex drive,
mm-hmm.
run amok, turning into this.
Right.
It's really
yeah.
not about a healthy sex drive at all.
No. But, I mean, yeah. there is this, it complicates it when we live in a society that definitely, you know, triggers men to get turned on to seeing women sexually
violated.
Well, there's
definitely the sex and yeah. power aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And here's something that I try to use with people when I give these presentations at colleges and conferences and whatnot, because people need to get into the frame of understanding it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think of how, you know, gay and lesbians, how they, you know, have been marginalized
mm-hmm.
and had their sex taken from them and all these things. And we understand that it's not just sex when it comes to gay and lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so easy to go, why does anybody have a problem
mm-hmm.
with a man having sex with a man
right.
or a woman having sex with a woman? It's just sex.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. And I think if we get over those facile, it's just sex things and stop thinking that mm-hmm. rape is just sex.
Right.
Or homophobia is just about sex. It truly is about sexual power and the way that power is enforced
mm-hmm.
through sexuality, which is rape, power enforced through the medium of sex. And I think what people have a problem with, homophobic people have a problem with men and men being together, is, well, if you've got two men, two alphas, one alpha's acting like a beta,
mm-hmm.
how do you know who is on the top
mm-hmm.
and how do you know who is on the bottom? Because in a traditional male-female relationship, the man's on top, the woman's on bottom,
mm-hmm.
everything's easy, we all understand.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start doing same-sex couples, you throw the power
mm-hmm.
out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
For people who can't conceive of sex non-hierarchically.
Yeah, definitely, and the gender roles. You know, that's,
so
that's,
I do definitely
yeah.
think it's a sex plus power fusion
mm-hmm.
that causes homophobia. Because if it were just about sex, it wouldn't be a thing that people get tied up to
mm-hmm.
fences and left to die
with. Right, right, right.
You know, it's much more serious than just sex.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who brushes off homophobia as just a fear of male sex is missing the key aspect behind homophobia
mm-hmm.
and rape and a whole lot of other oppressions.
Yeah. The other argument made is that it's a lot better to make lots of money as a prostitute than working at a minimum wage job like McDonald's.
Well, that presupposes that most prostitutes make a whole lot of money,
mm-hmm.
which is not really the case.
Right.
I mean, we have this thing called pimps. They're not an urban legend. They don't just exist in movies. They are real. The average age of entry into prostitution is about 12, 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, those 13-year-old girls, they're not pocketing all the proceeds from this.
Mm-hmm.
And what they, you know, even an adult woman, if she's prostituting, because the choice is not really hers, but, you know, her hunger, her drug addiction, the hungry bellies of her kids, the ability to pay rent, you know, because so many of these other external decisions are making this choice for her,
mm-hmm.
makes it hard for me to buy that particular argument.
Yeah. One of the other arguments, too, is that men prostitute as well, so
mm-hmm.
it's not just about women. And this is something, too, that Sheila Jeffries covers in her book. She says one thing that is common is that customers are overwhelmingly male for male and female prostitutes. She also talks about in her chapter on homosexuality and prostitution that if it is the power differences between men and women that have created men's prostitution of women, then we might expect those power differences to be reflected in both men's and women's experiences of being used by men in prostitution. Mm-hmm. You know, but in some instances, male prostitutes report enjoying their work and getting pleasure from it and actually orgasming from it, where women do not. And this is often among gay men who do choose to be in prostitution for various other reasons other than being economically coerced into it. She says that most men enter prostitution only casually and gain a very small part of their income from it. She says males experience less abuse. And then, but also both Johns and the men they use face the stigma of homosexuality. So that's a mm-hmm. downside to it. Women prostitutes create communities amongst themselves in order to help each other survive, where she didn't see that for male prostitutes. She also said that a variety of male prostitution that does share characteristics with experiences of women are those that have been sexually abused as children, are homeless, or living in the streets. She also noted differences among the different racial categories of men, where black males were less likely to change their sexual practices in response to AIDS than white men were, suggesting their greater vulnerability, and they performed more dangerous sex acts as well with regards to oral sex and things like that. So I thought that was interesting, but it is true that the majority of prostitutes are women.
By far,
that's something that needs to be said. She also mentioned that those in desperate search of affection sometimes turn to prostitution. You know, even among these young boys who have been abused and don't have a father figure or a mother figure. They mm-hmm. turn to that prostitution for these reasons. And then she also, another interesting point, she discusses the connections between child sexual abuse and relations between prostitution and the self-mutilation of transsexuals. Mm. And that was very, very interesting. Something that we really don't hear enough about.
I would like to see more feminists, more sexual analysts take up the question of, you know, looking at we have this great resource to look at prostitution and the face of it. Mm-hmm. And it's in the alternative weeklies mm-hmm. all over this country. And you can pick up the Village Voice or the Boston Phoenix or any number of these, and you can turn to the back and you can see the faces of the prostitutes. Mm-hmm. And you can see that they're female mm-hmm. and they're not male. And even when they are male, they're she-male.
Yeah.
So it's not as simple as just
right.
you know, transgendered people mm-hmm. wind up in prostitution.
No, they're
it's
mostly
something very specific
they're mostly
about
male
people
to female.
Who are performing femininity
mm-hmm. right.
are for sale. Because right. you don't see female to male transgendered in
yeah.
the back. So there's something serious going on there that is an exploitation of mm-hmm. the performance mm-hmm. of femininity and what's expected of you. If you're going to be a man performing mm-hmm. femininity, this will be expected of you.
Right. Have you seen that T-shirt? I'm sure you have and got as upset as I did. It has a picture of a woman stripping around a pole, and it says, "I support single moms." Have you seen it?
I think it goes back to your point about how they're not buying sex. They're buying the degradation.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's nothing sexy about that.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, ha-ha, she's a single mom about that.
Yeah.
We don't really revere single moms.
Right.
There was I live in Portland, Oregon, and there was every year a bar tour goes around to the strip clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And one year they advertised the tickets to these bar tours saying, you know, better get your tickets fast because they're going faster than a stripper with a new bag of meth. Now, why is that sexy?
Yeah.
Why is the idea of a woman addicted to drugs
yeah, because
so desperate
she has to prostitute.
Sexy?
Yeah.
There's a fairly popular musical band, and they have a song on their album called "Lap Dance is Better When the Stripper's Crying." How is that sexier?
Yeah.
You know, it's totally
it
about the degradation of a woman, the
yeah.
taking of her down.
Right.
And I think that's another theme that you see in MILF porn, mm. Mothers I'd Like to Fuck. Because the idea being, mothers are supposed to be sacred
mm-hmm.
and dignified.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be these on a pedestal women that
right.
we all love. So if you can take the woman most vaunted on a pedestal and slam her face into
yeah.
the dirt, then you've achieved something.
Right, exactly. I mean, if they really supported single moms, they'd be supporting reproductive rights, child support enforcement, and things like that, right?
Yes,
and
how would they mean it in a good way.
No,
that's
they
for
don't.
Sure.
And I wonder how they would feel, these young kids wearing the shirts. How would they feel if their mom was a stripper? How much backlash would they get from their friends for that, right? As long as it's not their mom.
Yeah, the key is their moms aren't.
Right.
Your mom is. Mm-hmm. Your mom's a hoe.
Right, right.
But their mom isn't.
Yeah.
Their mom has never had sex ever.
Yep. Yeah, the other important thing I think we should talk about is connections between capitalism and prostitution. I know this is something that you focus on in your work as well. Mm-hmm. Like, what type of connections do you see there?
Well, so often discussions about prostitution seem to focus around morality or religion or things that it's really not about.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a cold, hard, economical end. And that's really where it is. And the closer you get to looking at the economics instead of the sex, the closer you are to the truth of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a big business.
That's right.
It's really huge. And I was talking with somebody earlier today about, you know, wouldn't it be great if a woman could just go and prostitute herself and she'll be safe and it would be okay? And my question is, well, why would a pimp let her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always say, well, isn't it better than working at McDonald's? Well, that pimp doesn't want to work at McDonald's either.
Yeah.
He'd rather have, and, you know, he doesn't want to suck dick for money either. He doesn't want to do either of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So he finds her to do it.
Yeah.
He preys upon somebody vulnerable to do it because he doesn't want to work at Mickey D's either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at the motivation of traffickers and pimps, they're really not all about the sexual liberation of johns or prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
They just want the cash.
Right.
And it's astonishing to me that so many men are willing to fork out as much cash as they do for this relishing of the power over a woman for a short period of time.
Yeah.
Homeless men will spend their scrounged up $10 to rent a homeless woman because at least they're better than someone for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you speak of McDonald's and other jobs, and one of the arguments is isn't prostitution, especially among prostitutes' rights groups, isn't it a job like any other job? And this is the basis, I think, for their organizing.
I can think of no other job that's like prostitution. There's no other job where it's part of the job description to have the boundaries of your physical body, your bodily integrity, violated repeatedly. Yeah, I mean, there's no other job where you're expected to have things put inside your body like that. There's no other job that a heroin addict lying limp on the floor can do.
Right.
You know, no other job that a 13-year-old commands a higher price than a 23-year-old with 10 years of experience. So,
true.
I mean, and I think this too, sometimes I get that, you know, prostitution is like any other performance. It's like acting. Well, I've never heard of a slave trade in actresses.
Right.
You know, there's not too many women being taken out of Nigeria, forced to go to Los Angeles and perform Shakespearean plays. You know, so it's really not quite like being an actress.
Yeah, and speaking of slavery, in her book, The Idea of Prostitution, Jeffries uses Orlando Patterson's Slavery and Social Death to make connections between prostitution and slavery. He says that slavery was often seen as social death, alienated from all rights or claims of birth, one ceased to belong in his own right to any legitimate social order. All slaves experienced secular excommunication. Prostituted women also suffer a social excommunication arising from their work. Pimping and trafficking involve separating women from their connections, family, and known location, so they are in total control of the pimp. And this is something similar we saw as well with slaves. Bodies of slaves were often marked to denote their status, whether it was naming, clothing, hairstyle, etc. And pimps often rename women when they turn them out into prostitution. Historically, they've had to wear certain clothing regulations, yellow hair, a particular color of clothing, or those that represent sexual availability. And what's really disgusting is that this is becoming a fashion trend now. I mean, you know, looking sexually available at all times, wearing Playboy clothing, purses, wristbands, whatever, wearing the least amount of clothing possible is fashionable for you know, our young girls and older women as well. So it's almost like we're pushing out prostitutes.
Well, I mean, even prostitution. We can talk about the crossovers between prostitution and pornography because I hear people
want to
say that, you know, oh, that little girl is dressing like a prostitute. Well, what does that 12-year-old know of prostitution? She knows nothing. What she knows is pornography.
Exactly.
That's what she sees.
Yes.
She doesn't know what prostitution looks like.
Yep.
She knows what the internet looks like.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is something that was definitely stressed at the Pornography and Pop Culture Conference in Boston, was, you know, this inseparability of pornography and prostitution, that we need to start seeing how they're connected, and that they're indivisible.
Yeah. Years ago, I remember, before I, you know, even really became a feminist, which only happened when I was about 20, 21, I thought about that. Like, well, if prostitution is illegal, how can you pay someone for sex on camera?
Right.
It just seemed like one of those kind of duh.
Yeah.
You know, kind of things that you ask, like, well, how can that even work? But then you just, you learn to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way you learn to walk past homeless people on the street without even thinking.
Right.
You just learn that that's just the way it is, and you keep walking. And then at a certain point in my early 20s, I kind of just stopped walking, and I said, wait a second. Really, just wait a second. But of course, at this time, my environment was really creating me, because here I was, you know, coming of age. It was late 90s, early 2000s, and pornography changed. It wasn't like it was when I was a kid, you know, and I feel like I didn't seek out this activism as much as the external pressures on me from my environment pretty much shoved it in my face so much I couldn't ignore it anymore.
Right.
Because I was really doing a good job for a lot of years ignoring it. I was a porn user for a couple of years, you know, and I was told it was okay. It was even feminist.
Yeah, it's feminist.
And I believe that. And now when I think of all the women I know who formerly prostituted, and some of them are in lefty, liberal, progressive circles, and they've told me, you know, my friend said this was a good thing to do for money. My feminist friend said this was empowering, and now I wake up with night terrors. And now I wonder if every man I meet has seen me naked on the internet.
Right.
And I started thinking about those women. And any time you're going to promote prostitution as a job, to even think that, you're going to put a lot of women in men's harm's way. Because it doesn't matter what you think in your head about if it's a job or not. It matters what that man thinks of you as a person. And you can change in your head prostitution into sex work, but you can't stop that John from doing what he's going to do.
Right.
And so that, to me, I think it's reckless and really dangerous for anyone to suggest that women enter sex work in, you know, 2007, in the day that it is now.
Yeah.
It is not safe to do. And I think to elide over those dangers is really whitewashing the truth.
And with pornography, I think it's one of the things that Catherine McKinnon stresses, is that, you know, with pornography, you can be prostituted over and over and over again for the rest of your life. That video is going to be used. You know, and many women testify that the use of pornography was integral in seasoning them. It's been used in brothels, and many prostitutes are filmed while they're having sex. Pornography is, you know, so they're just completely connected. And in this book, Idea of Prostitution, am I promoting it enough?
It's strange to me that even the things that we all kind of know, we collectively as a society choose to forget. It's too painful to look at. Prostitution and pornography, to see them for what they really are. It hurts too much, so we don't look. We don't open the back pages of the Village Voice and read all the names of those women for sale next to the used Buicks, and they cost less than the used Buicks. You know, and that's horrible, and we don't look there. You know, we just learn to stop right after the movie reviews and just put the rest of the paper back. But what if we looked? I mean, we know about Tracy Lords. We don't know the truth, really, because Tracy Lords was only 15 years old when she was a Penthouse centerfold. How is Penthouse allowed to get away with that? We all know that Tracy Lords had this horrible abuse done to her as a teen, fed drugs, pimped out by her mother's boyfriend, and yet we all forget. And there was a movie advertised recently making jokes about Tracy Lords, the porn star. And all I could think is, you are talking about a child who was raped.
Right.
And you're just making jokes like, well, it's just porn.
Yeah, it's
porn,
not even
so funny.
They do recognize it. They just don't care. I mean, it's just, people are completely desensitized to it now. And the same thing with Jenna Jameson, you know. Gail Dines did a great presentation at the conference about that, and you know, their histories and what they're involved in, and people just don't care. Or they think that they deserved it, or they brought it on themselves, you know. For those that are just tuning in, again, you're listening to the F-Files on WNHU 88.7 FM. I'm here with Sam Berg, and we're discussing prostitution. And we're already 38 minutes into the show, and I wanted to talk about, you know, some of the prostitution rights groups and what they advocate. You know, Sheila Jeffries talks about this too in the book, and that many of them are arguing for prostitution as sex work and as work like any other job. And one of the problems she sees with this is that when you call it sex work, you know, it's this language issue. It completely delineates the fact that men are the problem here and that men abuse women. Like, what term would you use instead of clients? She wants to use Johns because it kind of is more of a defamatory word than clients. And when you say sex work, it does. It seems like work like any other job. And like you said, it really isn't. It's completely gendered in a lot of ways. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the group Coyote, which stands for Cast Off Your Old Tired Ethics. They were formed in 1973 by Valerie Jenis, I think.
I'm not sure if Valerie did. And it was a couple of women who started it, and a couple of men.
Well, originally it was, you know, formed to bring attention to the abuses of local prostitutes and to provide community services to women and prostitutes. But it seems to be very, very common, and it seems to be popular among liberal men. They've been funded by Playboy, which makes you wonder how progressive could they actually be. If Playboy's funding them.
Modern progressive feminism.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That's just cutting edge right there. You're just not feminist enough to catch Playboy feminism as your problem.
I'm a prude. Sorry. But it gets
the idea of turning prostitution into work, which is an idea, is, I think, very short-sighted. But I'll admit that it was an idea I had myself for a time. Before I really knew anything, I thought, well, gosh, if you just legalize it and make it a job, won't that make it better?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Won't that make it safer? And I believe that for a time. And then, you know, my friends kind of started dying, and my eyes started being opened. And I watched people I loved just implode from the weight of what they were trying to carry and all the lies about it's not a big deal, it's just a job, it's just sex. I can't think of anybody who would hear that their partner has used a prostitute and then go, oh, you used a prostitute? Oh, I don't care. That's just sex.
Yeah.
I think most people, upon hearing that their loved one used a prostitute, would be devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just in that relationship. It's the relationship between the John and the prostitute that causes the devastation, too.
Yeah.
So to the idea, I mean, to just say that if we just call it work, it becomes work. Well, how many times have we seen the bumper sticker? You know, every mother is a working mother.
Yeah, yeah.
How many times have we tried to get through that mothers are important?
Yeah.
That mothering is a job. And we can't get people to recognize mothering as a job. We're not going to get them to recognize whoring as a job.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that with Mother's Day,
no,
we do all these honorifics for mothers, but it doesn't have substantive weight behind
it. No, but you get a lot more male support for it.
Right. Oh, I love my mom. How could I hate women? I love my mom.
No, I mean, you get a lot more male support for prostitution as work. But I mean, oh, I don't know. I think one of the reasons why they argue this is because they want to try to get rid of the stigma, the whore stigma. They want it to be seen as people just like everyone else. And so this is one of the ways they try to do that.
And that's a noble goal. And I do think that, you know, getting prostituted women to rise to the level of human would be great. But, you know, no woman is rising to the level of human in this world.
Right.
We're all kind of somewhere in livestock status at the time being.
Yeah.
We don't have a right to abortion. I mean, this fundamental right to choose whether or not we will bear children is not ours. And I fail to see how if, you know, the Catholic school mom can't get her rights, how we're going to get it for the most impoverished, most spit upon people of society.
Yeah.
It's just a dream that's not going to happen until men start changing their behaviors towards women.
And I think it's important, too, to note that most of the women in Coyote are not sex workers.
No.
They're or even ex-prostituted women. The founder was not a working prostitute. Not that, you know, you need to be a prostitute to, but if they're sitting there saying that prostitution is something great and wonderful and they've never done it, then that's something to be considering.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, their biographer has come up. In 1993, Coyote's biographer says that less than 3% of the members of Coyote were prostitutes.
Right.
Who are all these people?
Right, but the media promotes and accepts this. They're the ones that get all the publicity. And Jeffrey says the positive celebratory stance taken by a small number of prostitutes rights activists seems to gain considerable publicity because it is popular with the media and with all the powerful economic and political forces which represent the interests of the Johns. It makes sense. I mean,
well, sure.
Of course they're going to get the attention. But then there is another group I just wanted to mention, Whisper, Women Hurt in the System of Prostitution Engaged in Revolt, who define prostitution as sexual violence. So there are other groups out there that have a radical stance on this topic. But, you know, we have about 15 minutes left, and I wanted to talk about, you know, the legalization of prostitution, the differences between that and the Swedish model, and I think that'd be really important. So,
well, yeah, the Swedish model is one I prefer. Like I said, I used to think that just straight out legalizing, call it a job, that'll make it okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's already legal to be a stripper, and they're not getting their justice.
Is legalization the same as decriminalizing prostitution?
And then who you ask. No, I don't believe it is. I mean, to go from the understood terms of it,
mm-hmm.
legalization is, you know, full government regulations, health checks, you know, brothels, more government interference mm-hmm. in the sense of legalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Decriminalization, to me, is pretty much just don't look and the problem isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just says we're not going to, you know, set up brothels, we're not going to set up regulations, we're not going to put any restrictions or rules on this at all. You just go work it all out amongst yourselves, and we'll hope that works out okay, because the free market is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the free market is no friend to women, and it's not, there's no such thing as a free market.
Well,
and there's just markets.
Are there countries just where it is legalized or decriminalized? Or
sure, an example of legalization mm-hmm. would be the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
where they have a board, and they try mm-hmm. to regulate it, and rules and stipulations for street prostitution versus brothel prostitution and various methods.
Yeah, Jeffrey
New Zealand mm-hmm. has gone more steps of decriminalizing it. Pretty much, you know, like I said, do what you do, we're just not going to interfere.
Right.
And that sort of thing. And it really hasn't worked well in either situation, because they haven't changed men's violence. And if men's violence doesn't change, then nothing changes.
Right.
So that's the driver here. That's
right.
What keeps the system going, men's selfishness and violence. Because prostitution is a violence against a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I say that, I'm not talking 100% of the time, every time it's rape. But when you look at the continuum of prostitution and what it takes to make a woman prostitute, well, there's a reason that 90% of prostitutes have pimps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because they want to share the wealth with a bunch of men.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they need those pimps to protect them from other men.
Which stinks, because many of them are also being raped and abused by their pimps. So they're being raped by both. Right?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking how young the average woman gets into it. And the way we think that, you know, if she got into it at 13, suddenly she turns 18 and she's an adult making a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we discount everything that happened to her. The whole world of experience of being a woman that happened to her before that time, suddenly she's 18, she's made the free choice.
So,
think there's a lot of problems with that kind of belief in a free market system where we're all equal agents,
mm-hmm.
equally imparting our beliefs and power on a system, because we're all not equal.
Mm-hmm. So prostitution, you know, one of the questions you have on your website, can prostitution be made medically safer with regulations?
Mm-hmm.
This can't be? I mean, what about unionizing? I know they've talked about unionizing.
Well, unionizing hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a pretty simple reason why, really, because women don't want to be hookers.
Yeah.
They don't. And so if you look in two places that have legalized prostitution, the Netherlands and Germany, in the Netherlands, women are allowed to join the service union, Verdi. Huge service union, hundreds of thousands of people in it. So they're allowed, and it's estimated that Germany has 400,000 sex workers in it.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 100 join the union.
Yeah.
Out of 400,000, 100 join the union. That's 0.00025%. I mean, if even 1% joined the union, it would be 4,000 women instead of 100.
Right.
So they've offered it. And here, I mean, what they get is health care, legal aid,
mm-hmm.
30 paid holidays a year,
mm-hmm.
a 5-day work week, Christmas and holiday bonuses. And with all this incentive and all the legalization, women are still going, no. But it's not that easy because I don't believe it's a choice that women are making. I mean, to be able to say no or yes to a union implies you have the choice.
Right, right.
If your pimp is sitting down on you
exactly.
and you're 13, you know, what choice do you have to join a union? If you're from Nigeria, you've been brought to Germany, no union for you.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes, with the legalization of prostitution in Germany, why aren't German women doing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's so profitable, so empowering, such a great way to get in touch with your sexual self, why do they keep having to import women from Romania,
yeah.
from the poorest nations in the world, to come there and do it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem, and we need to look at that more seriously.
Well,
in Amsterdam, it's been the same case.
Yeah.
There's an estimated 25,000 sex workers in Amsterdam. 200 joined the union Red Thread.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less than 1%. So even when they offer these incentives, they're not really taking into consideration women don't want to do this.
Yeah.
They really want out. They say in study after study around the world, we want out of prostitution right now.
Yeah.
Sweden has implemented a new program. And this is what I'm all about. You may have picked up.
Before you go into that, I just wanted to say something about the unionizing. Jeffries talks about this radio program called You Can Touch Me, I'm Part of the Union. This shows the recognition of prostitution as just a job like any other mm-hmm. undermines the demands of other women union members who are precisely arguing, you can't touch me, I'm part of the union, in respect to sexual harassment.
Right.
So prostituted women are being paid to receive exactly the treatment as sexual objects that other women workers are seeking to abolish.
You can't call sexual harassment a job and pay it and think that's going to solve the problem.
Yeah.
I think most women would understand if their boss said to them, hey, I'll give you extra money to call you a stupid whore.
Yeah.
But that would be wrong.
Well, it's like,
and yet
yeah.
you go into a strip club and these men pay their money down and mm-hmm. they just let loose with all the insults
yeah.
they think they have a right to say mm-hmm. because they've paid their money.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't be accepted in any other workplace.
Well, let's talk about the Swedish model, and then I also want to say a few things about Annie Sprinkle.
Sure. So the Swedish model is what I'm real big on. We've been focusing so much on the women. It's so easy to look at the big-breasted, short-skirt-wearing
yeah.
fishnet woman leaning against a pole, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not the face of prostitution, because the face of prostitution is the men. There's so many more men per prostitute than there are the women. And so what Sweden has done... And Sweden's a great country to be a woman, you know?
Yeah, they've got
good stuff going.
They were rated number one in gender equity for the past 2 years, and the U.S. keeps dropping. But, you know, they based it on economic equality,
mm-hmm.
on reproductive rights, medical care, educational attainment, and all those things, and they rated number one.
Yeah, they've got paid maternity leave,
yeah.
you know, free higher education, mm-hmm. all sorts of good stuff. And so they've seen prostitution. They've tried working with it in a sort of decriminalized way where it's accepted.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, they had to come to the conclusion that doesn't work.
Okay.
The men, as long as they feel they have a right to get inside women's bodies, there's a problem, because there is no right to get inside a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they started doing was focusing on the demand and decriminalizing the women.
Mm-hmm.
And this is truly the key, because everywhere else in the world, the women get the muck. They get the dirt. They get the book thrown at them. Because
yeah.
it's a lot easier to put in jail a poor, drug-addicted woman who lives on the street than it is to put the family man, the doctors,
yeah.
the lawyers,
yeah.
the construction workers, the police officers, who are the men using these women.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lawyer. He's got social support and a family. You know, he's not going to jail easy.
Right.
She's got a pimp who barely cares whether she lives or dies. So they go after the women.
Mm-hmm.
Sweden said, no way. This is a man's problem. This is a problem of men preying on vulnerable people, vulnerable women and girls primarily, but really vulnerability, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stopped arresting the women, stopped charging them. It's not a crime to be so poor and desperate that you sell your body to live. It should never be a crime to be that poor and desperate.
Mm-hmm.
But a man who takes advantage of that, that's seriously wrong.
Yeah.
And so they're having marvelous success with it, because they're going right to the root of the problem, which is this idea that men have a right to sex that needs to be fulfilled. And that's the problem behind rape, behind incest,
mm-hmm.
behind sexual harassment at work. Because what is sexual harassment at work except your boss deciding, because he's a man and you're a woman, you owe him something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the idea that more feminists should get behind, starting at the back of the line, because the line doesn't get any further back than prostituted women. That's
yeah.
the back of the line.
But, I mean, a lot of people will say that they're taking away from business. I mean, if they're going to criminalize men and not women, then aren't they taking away part of their business and harming
them
economically?
Women don't look at it as a business.
Mm-hmm.
They look at it as what they got to do to get along.
Right, so how are they going to get along if they're criminalizing the men and isn't that cutting down on their supply of...
Well, that's why Sweden's such a great place, because they have a very strong social safety net where mm-hmm. they offer drug addiction help. They offer to help retrain the women into other careers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not just arresting the men and leaving the women to do whatever. They really are working. Prostitute women have said what they need,
mm-hmm.
and what they need is to get off the drugs, have a safe place to live, child care, and freedom from their pimps.
Yeah.
And that's what they really need. You know, what they're not saying they need is help to be better prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're saying... Yeah. We don't just need more condoms.
They don't want an upscale cage.
Yeah, I mean, they're not saying, we want help staying in this.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, please, please get me out yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Sweden is responding and saying, all right, we'll help you get out.
Well, I'm looking at this thing online. It's the Swedish model, arguments and consequences. And some of the things they're saying is that not so good results. A lot of women simply left the streets to start working on their own or in illegal brothels instead.
That's really never been substantiated.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked for the proof of this, but it's not. There's been no recorded increase in prostitution. Now, of course, the nature of the Internet everywhere has made it that more prostitution is going to the Internet just everywhere it is, whether it's legal, decriminalized, completely illegal, everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's gone up less in Sweden. Finland, which is a very comparable country to Sweden, has had enormous problems with trafficking and prostitution going up in their country.
Mm-hmm.
Sweden hasn't seen nearly that increase. And I think the greatest testament to the Swedish model's success is that even though the Netherlands has a population of twice that of Sweden, the Netherlands has 10 times the prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this idea, you know, that boys will be boys. They're always going to use prostitutes. There's always going to be a stable population of prostitute-using men. But that's really not true,
mm-hmm.
because it fluctuates per country. Whereas in Sweden, it's maybe 15% of men have used prostitutes. You go to Thailand, and it's 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like there's a stable group of men that are just going to do it regardless. You know, men can change.
Yeah.
They can stop preying on drug-addicted teens
mm-hmm.
if they want to. If they're given the incentive to,
right.
They can knock it off.
Well, they also say here, too, that street workers are exposed to more violence now. They're saying that the women are economically more desperate because of the client's fear of being caught.
It's really never been substantiated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In fact, on the other hand, Gunilla Ekberg, who has done a lot of work in Sweden, she's from Sweden, does a lot of work there with prostituted women for many years, has come out with these information saying that about 60% of Sweden's prostitutes have taken use of the new government programs
mm-hmm.
to help them get out of prostitution. So if there's a huge number of Swedish prostitutes
mm-hmm.
that don't like the law, that are upset with it, nobody can find them.
Yeah.
You know, they're not speaking up. And it's strange to think that the happy women wouldn't speak up.
Yeah.
Whereas women who have been raped and terrorized would.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that rape victims don't really talk about it. It's so much easier to wear a shirt that says "Sluts Unite,"
yeah,
than to wear one that says "I've been raped more times than I can count.
Mm-hmm.
Ask me how." You know, these women don't want to talk about it.
Yeah,
who wants to get up in front of a room and tell everybody about all the times they've been raped?
Yeah,
very hard to do. So to think that those women are just inordinately vocal, and the happy middle class women are just so afraid of recrimination that they're not saying anything,
mm.
it really flips the logic of everything we know about sexual assault on its head.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a couple of minutes left. One of the questions that you also have on your website is that women like Annie Sprinkle and Nina Hartley claim to be liberated by their experiences of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this is something people argue. If they find a group of women who claim that they're liberated and enjoying it, then that completely, you know, shapes their opinion about prostitution.
There's always... In any group of people, you're going to find some people who can say what you want to say.
Yeah.
And especially people who have as much invested in the industry as Annie Sprinkle and Nina Hartley do have in the industry. It's easy to see what the motivation is. But that a couple of prostitutes have learned to profit from
mm-hmm.
this really doesn't hold water in the face of the overwhelming number of prostitutes who are suffering greatly.
But this
is a class issue.
This is a class issue as well, though. Not many people can do what they're doing right now or be able to lift themselves into that position. You know what
I mean?
Not
many, you know, prostituted women have press agents and book deals and speaking tours.
Exactly, yeah.
Not a whole lot of them. And, of course, all the dead ones, well, they've got nothing, right?
Right.
They're not going to release anything. They're not going to start a blog.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to give a great interview in some magazine because they're dead. Funny thing about the way that those silenced people just never get their story out.
Yeah.
And then one girl in particular, was a 14-year-old found in Canada. And it's just awful the way this poor girl was found was in a garage underneath a 50-something-year-old John. And what happened was it was cold. And so he pulled her off the street, you know, 14, 15, into this garage and left the car running so that they could have heat while he screwed her in his car. And, of course, the carbon monoxide killed them. What a way to die.
Yeah.
And I want to, where's her book?
Yeah, really.
You know, I want to see her in a debate with Annie Sprinkle.
Yeah, right.
Telling her story about what her life was like. And she'll never get that chance.
Well, she claims to be a performance artist who learned her skills in prostitution, as well as a sexual educator for women and men. Women like Annie provide similar performances as prostitutes, but to larger audiences, and see themselves as intellectuals and art lovers, so that now it's art. And these performances take place in theaters instead of peep shows, which is an up-class version of prostitution, right? In the chapter that Jeffries has on normalizing prostitution, she quotes Sprinkle as saying, "She had no sexual abuse in her past, but went into prostitution 6 months after losing her virginity because she needed the money. She worked in a massage parlor and loved having sex with men she found physically repulsive in order to satisfy her beauty and the beast fantasy. In a way, she says, prostitution was the perfect job because she needed to feel sexy and she needed people telling her that she was sexy because she thought she was ugly."
I hear that a lot from prostituted women.
Yeah, and like...
they were holding on to men's opinions of them so hard that they needed them to feel sexy.
That's
and they just kind of turned out the insults, you know. And they don't really hear all the insults.
Right.
But they hear the compliments because they desperately need to hear the compliments.
Yeah, and in our society, when you're valued for one thing only, well, that's not surprising. You know, to get your sense of approval through men.
It's hard for me too when I talk to these women, and you know, I talk to them, of course, differently than I would talk to you in this situation or anyone else, and to try and explain the difference between self-esteem and men's esteem that isn't even esteem because the men don't like them very much.
Yeah,
you know, so try to the difference between it coming from you and it being relied on externally from a bunch of guys who really aren't very big fans of yours in the true sense.
But it's easy. I mean, you could talk about it and they can acknowledge it, but it's so different to be able to bring yourself out of that. Like, how do you just reverse that way of thinking and stop feeling insecure and stop telling yourself to not look at those things in society that make you feel inadequate? You know, like the Cosmopolitan magazine. I mean, you can stop looking at all that stuff, but still it's very difficult to reverse the way you've been taught to think for all these years.
Yeah, I want to know why men use prostitutes more. It's very hard to get men who are Johns to talk about why they use prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they use real facile things like, well, I just wanted sex. But having read the research as much as I can on it, you know, there's a multitude of reasons, but it really does all come down to the needing to feel better than someone for a little bit. Just a little bit of power over somebody else for a short while, however else they term it. But the men aren't fools. The men know that prostitution hurts women. I've got some quotes here from Trix, who know what's going on. And so I wish we could get men to talk more. I mean, I know why poor, sad, oppressed women, you know, turn to these men for their esteem, for their everything. I get that. Why men would want to have sex with someone who doesn't want to have sex with them, that's foreign to me.
Yeah, but men are taught that these women want to have sex with them. They're taught that women just belong to them, that all women are available and wanting it. I mean, that's what you see in pornography. You know what I mean? It's just, these are the messages that they're given on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they just
feel
entitled.
Like any other drug you take to make you feel better, you know, in the act of sex, you can forget about the awfulness of everything else for a little while.
Yeah.
Just a couple minutes, you can get so absorbed in what you're doing. But then the question really becomes, well, if the men are getting the sex they want from the prostituted women, why are they so violent to them?
Yeah.
Why do they hurt them? Why do they burn them with cigarettes?
Yeah, you know, it's almost like they hate the fact that they've been so controlled by, you know, I guess you could say women, but in reality, this need that they feel they have for sex, or that they feel they're being controlled by this greater force, and they take it out on women. Do you know what I mean?
I think the biggest lie of prostitution is that it's emotionless sex.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you could ever turn off your emotions as a human being.
Right.
You know, not unless you're in a seriously disassociated state that's awful.
Yeah.
That very few people get to that place.
And I think that's part, I don't remember where I read this or heard it, but when men realize, like, during the act of sex with a prostitute, that they having trouble turning these emotions off, that's when they lash out at women.
Yeah.
You know, it's really...
Because you can't have emotionless sex. You can't think you're just going to do that, and it's going to be that, and then you're over and done with. And I think the lie that's put to men that they'll enjoy this, that this will satisfy them, then when they go do it and they realize it doesn't, you know, it's they've been lied to.
Mm-hmm.
And who do they take it out on?
Yeah.
Well, who's the nearest convenient target? Oh, it's her.
Yeah.
So they do that because there is no such thing as emotionless sex.
Yeah.
Really, there isn't.
Well,
and men who say that they're aiming for that, I feel are going to be the ones who lash out when they don't get what they expect.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous for women. It really is. And there's different kinds of Johns. I mean, some are just out and out sadists.
Mm-hmm.
But really, they are just out and out. They want to hurt women.
Oh, yeah.
And this is how they go about hurting women.
Mm-hmm.
But there's others, too. You know, the curiosity guy. I'm of the opinion that most men will try it once.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those won't go back.
Yeah.
They'll find it so unsatisfying. You know, maybe they were with a bunch of buddies at a party or something. But they won't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ones who keep going back that we have the problem with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, most men don't use prostitutes. It's a small number. I think in the United States, it's fair to say about 1 out of every 5 men uses a has used a prostitute in his life. I think that's, from what I've seen, a pretty decent average.
Yeah, I probably, for pornography, it's a lot higher.
I mean, why don't the other 4 out of 5 men?
Yeah.
I can answer that question. I know why I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to get behind the mentality of why some men do. And then some men just go,
Yep.
But no, not this again. I'm not doing this. No stripper at my bachelor party. No.
Yeah. More men need to speak up about that. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm here with Sam Berg, who is a radical feminist activist writer, born and raised in New York and now living in Portland, Oregon. I probably shouldn't reveal that information on the radio there as we're talking about prostitution. A longtime activist with experience managing media for political campaigns and lobbying to alleviate the worst aspects of poverty, in 2002 she co-founded and eventually directed a sexual health activist group organizing reproductive rights actions with young women in Portland. The past few years, Sam has focused her writings and energies towards educating about the harms of legalized prostitution and the rise in sex trafficking and other forms of sexual capitalism through the 90s. She is also founder of genderberg.com. Thank you so much for being on the show, Sam.
Thank you for having me, Jackie.
And for those that are just tuning in, if you'd like to hear this show, you can catch it at ffiles.net for a free downloadable archive. And we hope you tune in same time, same place, right here every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. on 88.7 FM, WNHU West Haven.
Politically, where anti-pornography politics for me was a natural progression, because when I think of my overall politics, and that is, I consider myself a progressive, the societies that I feel are moving forward, such as Cuba, such as the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, societies that move forward do not take pornography or prostitution with them. Because the basis of that industry in this country, an $8 billion one, I might add, is built on the exploitation and inequality of women's lives on a daily basis. That is why I am part of, and proud to be, a part of the anti-pornography movement.
The F-Files is produced by Jackie Arsenuk, music by Sarah Jones.
Your revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not happen between these thighs. Will not happen between these thighs. Will not happen between these thighs. The real revolution ain't about booty size, the Versace's you buys, or the Lexus you drives. And though we've lost Biggie Smalls,
Baby, you're a notorious revolution. We'll never allow you to lace no lyrical douche in my... Your revolution will not be you killing me softly with Fugees. Your revolution ain't gonna knock me up without no ring and produce little future MCs. Because that revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not find me in the backseat of a Jeep with LL hard as hell. You know, doing it and doing it and doing it well. You know, doing it and doing it and doing it well. Your revolution will not be you smacking it up, flipping it, or rubbing it down. Nor will it take you downtown or humping around. Because that revolution will not happen between these thighs. Your revolution will not have me singing, ain't no nigga like the one I got. Your revolution will not be you sending me for no drip drip VD shot. Your revolution will not involve me filling your nature eyes or helping you fantasize. Because that revolution will not happen between these thighs. No, no, not between these thighs. And oh, my Jamaican brother, your revolution will not make you feel bombastic and really fantastic and have you groping in the dark for that rubber wrapped in plastic. You will not be touching your lips to my triple dip of French vanilla, butter pecan, chocolate deluxe, or having Akinelli's dream. Mm-hmm. A 6-foot blowjob machine. Mm-hmm. You wanna subjugate your queen. Think I'ma put it in my mouth just cause you made a few bucks? Please, brother, please. Your revolution will not be me tossing my weave and making believe I'm some caviar-eating ghetto mafia clown. Or me giving up my behind just so I can get signed and maybe have somebody else write my rhymes. I'm Sarah Jones, not Foxy Brown. You know, I'm Sarah Jones, not Foxy Brown. And your revolution makes me wonder, where could we go? If we could drop the empty pursuit of props and the ego, we'd revolt back to our roots, use a little common sense on a quest to make love de la soul, no pretense. But your revolution will not be you flexing your little sex and status to express what you feel. Your revolution will not happen between these thighs, will not happen between these thighs, will not be you shaking and me faking between these thighs. Because the real revolution, that's right, I said the real revolution, you know, I'm talking about the revolution. When it comes, it's gonna be real. Yeah, it's gonna be real. That's right, it's gonna be real. Yeah, yeah.